Tonight's final bout is for the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship, scheduled for one fall or to curfew.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
The last of the Titans. In the passion and death of their struggle, the very art that had raised them to such Olympian heights was lost. Their techniques vanished.
Referee giving instructions here to both principals, and this should be one whale of a match to wind up things here in Madison Square Garden.
All right, fans of the Titans of Wrestling, if you're digging this show, you got to know that we've been doing them for a while. We've got an archive of shows that you're going to blow your mind. Just head on over to the Place to Be Nation to check them out. Titans of Wrestling Archives. You know you want to hear it.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Titans of Wrestling. And we have the full crew together. That's Pete, our lead analyst, Johnny Sorrow, our color commentator, I guess.
Yeah.
And Chief Jay Historian himself, Kelly Nelson. Say hello, fellas. Say hello, Pete.
Hey, what's up, guys? Fellas, ladies listening out there.
Johnny.
Hello.
Ladies.
Yeah. I'm stretching.
Okay.
Well, there are some, you know, there are some females in the PWO universe.
We have groupies? Do they call themselves the Titanettes?
Well, I don't know, great. If he's some modern fan. Kelly, how are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And of course, we're all gathered here for one thing and one thing only, and that is that yesterday something dropped on the WWE Network that none of us thought we'd ever see, and that was the last Battle of Atlanta. Now, I just want to go around the circle one time, because I would say even 2 days ago, I still didn't believe there was a hope in hell of this being real. Pete, what did you think when you discovered that this was a real deal and it was going to come to the network?
I think I rolled my eyes first, like, there's no fucking way, you know? Yeah. It's like, it's almost like really meeting Santa Claus or something. it was like, that's preposterous, you know, meeting the real Santa Claus. And, and then you see stuff, and like I saw Kelly made a point, like, okay, so far we haven't seen any Tommy Rich or Sawyer. We've seen Paul Ellering and yeah. Willie Anderson clips, but then they show, then on like the day before they show the a screenshot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh shit, this thing might exist. And then it came out that it had a 28 minute running time. And I'm just foaming at the mouth. So at 12:01, I'm like turning on the network, like waiting for it. I've stayed up to like 3 o'clock in the damn morning, hoping for it. I went to go to the bathroom like around 5 a.m. and then I turned it back on and see what's fucking there. I mean, I've honestly felt like a kid on Christmas. Like, I got to see this. I wanted to be the first one to put a review up on Pro Wrestling Only. That bastard fucking Chad from Georgia.
Well, it was funny, Pete, because I was on Twitter and I said to Chad, as soon as it's up, you just tell me straight away. And he was like, it's up, dude. I was like, what the? it was absolutely incredible. Kelly,
Pete, I just want to say real quick, Pete, Christmas morning must have been very unusual in your house.
Oh, dude, you are always up at the crack of fucking dawn.
No, it's just like Christmas. I want to see this much blood.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Silent Night, Deadly Night over at our house.
Kelly, what were you thinking? Because it was absolutely hilarious, because this first came out and Kelly like was doing like a kind of fucking minute-by-minute breakdown in our little Facebook chat. You know, second by second, like, oh, no. And, you know, if you look in the background there, that flag in the top says it's 1983, really, and all this sort of thing. So what did you make of it when it was actually real?
Well, when it was actually real, I was overjoyed. I mean, everyone's wanted to see this. I mean, amongst the hardest of the hardcores anyway. I've always wanted to see footage from places like LA and San Francisco in the 60s and 70s that we don't have, and other lost stuff, and to have something like this, you know, finally become available is just, it's like, wow, there's hope. Maybe more will, you know, be uncovered somehow. It's great to find something that, you know, we thought we would never have. And I was super excited. Yeah.
Johnny?
Well, part first, I'd like to thank you for picking up a meth habit so you could be up for the show today. You know, that's taking one for the team, buddy. So when they first announced it, I was optimistic. I was like, wait a minute. It seems like quite a thing to bait and switch. You know, and then you started seeing that, like, there's lots of people who are like, what? Never heard of it. And you're like, well, maybe they don't think it's that big a deal, and it might be a bait and switch. And then I was reading Kelly's comments, like, in the staccato 50s news guy voice. That's just in. All we've seen so far is Paul Ellering and Ole Anderson. Just like your part, I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, no, 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 I'm going to have faith. And when it was finally, like, clear that this was going to be it, I was, like, overjoyed. This is when people say the Holy Grail thing. I'm the older one of everybody here.
But you were there when they actually had a Holy Grail.
I know. God, that was great. That's good. but being told repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly by experts, it doesn't exist. It doesn't fucking exist. And you've heard rumors and legends about some tape trader named Ham and weird shit. And then, boom, there it is. And I just felt like, yes. I believed all this time that it was out there.
When I opened up the thing and it was... It was 28 minutes long. I was like,
"Yeah,
oh. we'll talk more about that in a second." I mean, just real quick, the implications, because the story of how it was found hasn't quite come up. All we've got is one tweet from the WWE Inside Archivist Twitter handle saying it was just found on an old Omni reel, which to me just says. So what else have they got? Because if you look down those Omni cards over the years, I mean, they all look incredible, the Omni cards.
Yeah.
And we have always been told.
Even in the dark days, even in the dark, shitty WCW days, they had good cards at the Omni, man.
Yeah. Wow. It's the MSG itself, man.
We've always been told that they never taped them. And, well, I mean, because the thing that struck me was the quality. You know, this didn't look like some shitty handheld. This looked like the camera crew that they had to show the clip on the Saturday TV.
Exactly, because an article I read, I reread it today, and it came out last year. Paul Ellering was quoted with saying something along the lines he believes it could, because they always had that one long camera shot to show the highlights on Saturday morning TV.
Yeah.
He said that a while ago, so I was like, so.
Do you think it's possible Vince has had this tape since 1984? Because.
this is in the buyout in WCW.
Yeah.
The Rocket thing.
I thought he bought Georgia all those years ago, though.
He bought the territory. He didn't buy it from Goldie. He just bought the time slot.
Yeah. It was like the video libraries or anything.
That was Vern Meltzer. This was part of the Crockett buyout.
Right. Okay. So he's had it since at least 2001. This is really interesting. Okay. So
the library is just in shambles when they got it. And so they have people going through it. So, I mean, you see it, like, even, like, you know, even on some of the DVDs they released, they're like that hour draw of Steamboat and Flair that has never been seen before.
Right.
That
yeah.
That, the G cage match on the Great American Bash with Flair and Morton and the Horseman Wyndham one, War Games one. I mean, those were never in circulation, and they just finally, you know, so it just shows how much stuff is out there that's not in circulation.
And we know our dealings with Bruce Tharp, Pete, especially your dealings with him.
Yeah.
You know how difficult it is to do this stuff. I mean, he's got all that tape, and he can't. It's not like he can just stick it online. It's on all sorts of different formats from over the years.
Yeah,
and what did Bruce say? It's like a grand for every tape or something. It's like
something like that. And then he doesn't even know what's on it until he gets it back. You know, so he's sending out the tape to get converted, and he has no idea what's on it unless he grabs it. I mean, he could if he wanted to grab a magnifying glass and look at the reel itself. Other than that, he has no other way of sourcing it until he gets it back.
Can you imagine being the archivist going through some random old tape and being like, oh my God, this is the last Battle of Atlanta? Like, when do you think it dawned on the guy who was looking?
It depends on who it was, man.
Yeah.
If it was like Rob Naylor type, he probably popped a Woody and jizzed all over the place.
Yeah.
It was like just some intern who was just, you know, just going pushing college credits. Who knows, you know?
Imagine this intern found it like years ago. And in just a casual conversation a couple weeks ago, I think we're laying around. We're looking for a retrospective on Tommy Rich for some reason. Yeah, I think I got this. And then that guy knows what it is and goes, what the fuck?
it's probably something that just flew under the radar for years because most people coming into contact with it were probably just WWF, WWE fans, didn't know the history. You know, Tommy Rich, Buzz Sawyer, two guys that didn't have a history at all with WWE. It's something that conceivably, in our eyes, it's a holy grail. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was a holy grail in the eyes of anybody working for WWE. That's why it's taken so long to come to light.
Well, this is one of the things I was going to say. I've been a little bit more active on the old Twitter recently. And one of the things that has struck me, just reading around comments, following different people, is just the amount of people, fans, reasonably hardcore fans as well, who didn't actually know what it was until this weekend, you know.
It's an age thing.
I still find it embarrassing.
But you've seen a lot of those comments, right, though, Pete? Like people saying, "Oh, what's the fuss about?" or "What is it?" or
You could be a hardcore fan, like a super super hardcore fan of WWE history, and not be aware of it completely.
You're right. It's an age thing because it was an AfterMag thing.
Oh, it was a complete AfterMag thing. We had to grow up with that being dangled in front of us as this lost grail. And some people would hear about that and tell them stories, but you know, it was like after a while they stopped talking about it.
Yeah, no, if I wasn't into the AfterMags in the 80s, I wouldn't have known about it.
We have a lot of hardcore fans nowadays who are into, they're into the modern products, they're into Dragon Gate, they're into that. It's a lot of spot fooey type of stuff. So they would have, it wouldn't even,
Different types of hardcore fans, right?
We saw people voting in that top 100 poll who said they knew a lot about wrestling and knew a lot about the current stuff, and they knew a lot more about, like, a Dragon Gate, for example, than I would know what the hell they'd do, but they had still needed to study up on Randy Savage. I mean, we heard that.
Yeah, I have to watch Savage versus Warrior for the first time.
They got to study up on.
But you also have the other type of hardcore fan you have, Pete, is the super hardcore WWF, WWE fan who knows like every single card, even like Boston House shows inside out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all they are. You know, they're purely that one promotion, you know?
Those guys who saw, like, how can you not have Undertaker in your top 100 or whatever, you know? That's that.
Well, but I'll tell you what, in most places I've read, not just PWO, but like other places I've read, it's getting pretty much overwhelming praise from these same young folk. So, you know, good on them.
Oh, great. That was one of my slight worries, actually, is that, the younger fans would pick up this match just because of all the hype around it. Because, I mean, I think it's very rare for a match from 1983 to get this much hype around the internet.
Oh, totally.
I was a little...
vast majority is praise from people who said, I never heard of this before last week, and it's awesome. So
I was a little worried that some fans might pick it up and just kind of dismiss all of old wrestling. Because
some of them have, and some of them have.
Some of them have done. I'll leave this one out there. It was just like a one sentence thing, and this was in the minority, but underwhelming. Didn't live up to the hype, fail of a grail. I'm like, oh,
that's actually pretty good.
Fail of a grail. I'm going to do my screening.
Like a variety.
Can you even fail at a grail? I mean, really?
That's the New York Daily News headline right there.
I know, yeah. Fail of grail.
Oh my god. It's not like you get to. I mean, in all my years as a wrestling fan, I can't remember a match. Like, I mean, we've had Holy Grails pop up before, but this is like, this is it. You know, this is like the Indiana Jones, like, middle of the.
Wait, Indiana Jones is a great example. I'm just picturing this guy after he got done typing that, just leaning back, his enormous self. With his the Cheetos falling out of his beard, all proud of that. Oh,
he's got one of those selfie sticks and takes a picture of himself.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. Hashtag
him with the camera.
Yeah, like over on NWA On Demand, like they've come up with some big matches. Like the Johnny Valentine match is huge.
Yeah.
They recently uploaded a Harley Race Wahoo McDaniel title match. I mean, that's like really huge.
Yeah.
But nothing to the magnitude, and it might be. And it's also because the Aftermath covered Georgia a lot more vigorously than they covered Houston wrestling. Mm-hmm. I mean, because like I would compare like the Buzz Sawyer, Tommy Rich type of feud, kind of like to the Jose Lothario Gino Hernandez like level feud in Houston, and because they're both blood blast cage matches, all type of different gimmicks, and. We're getting a lot of that on the NWA On Demand, and that's cool. But they're different. But they're on a different level because, like, the last battle in Atlanta. I mean, it's just mythical.
Yeah,
nobody can live like that. I mean, that it's if all the lost things that you could find. There's nobody could compete with that one.
I kind of feel like Georgia is a promotion, and Georgia fans in general are. I don't know. It seems to have more mythos around it.
Yes.
You know, that TBS show solely, you know, it just seems to have a lot more of a glow around it in a way. Like, I think of kayfabe memories.
Tommy
know.
Rich was one of the main cover boys of the Aftermags for, you know, a good 5-year stretch where he was.
Yeah, and a lot of people who had early cable had this. So lots of people outside the state of Georgia, you know, were watching this. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. And again, the Aftermags. I mean, I still remember like one of the headlines: "Did the Buzz Sawyer feud ruin Tommy Rich's feud?"
Legendary. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So why don't we move now from talking about our own excitement and some of the buzz around it in recent days to like what was this match all about? Because obviously this was a long running. Am I right? They feuded for at least 18 months, something like that.
Yeah.
It was a long, long time feud.
Yeah.
So who has some details about the background? Because I think a lot of people are probably wondering, you know, this was obviously the blow off to some feud. What happened in the feud?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have the WrestlingData.com story to tell. I haven't watched too much of the, extra footage or the... the TV stuff, the promos. I've seen bits and pieces over the years, but not enough to actually to be able to give you like a narrative of the feud off the top of my head. I can go with what I researched and to break my Chief J historian gimmick. I did this like an hour ago. So
and so did I. And I doubt that there's. I doubt there's a lot of, like, did you find this? Why no? Because there wasn't a lot out there in a short period of time. So,
what you've actually seen the stuff of Johnny. What is the stuff that you've seen? The footage that's out there?
Well, here's all I've seen. It's a match between the two of them. They're pretty young. from Georgia TV that ends in a schmoz with a Kevin Sullivan run-in and a young, gorgeous Jimmy Garvin for the save. Flash forward a year, and it's all they were feuding for a while. There's one where they're feuding for a while and stop, and now it's happening again, and we got to put a stop to this back and forth. There's Tommy Rich has a proposal. There's one that's footage of backstage brawls, and there's Bob Geigel saying that normally the NWA doesn't step into regional things, but we're right. going to make an exception. And then a couple of back and forths just for like the local markets and leading and Gordon Sully with them like leading up to the match. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is kind of what leads into what we were talking about just before we came on air, which is that, I mean, if you watch, I mean, I've tried to do it before. It's actually quite difficult to watch week to week Georgia television from that era because, I mean, it's basically just, I mean, it's very much just squash,
right.
On those shows. And they're basically interspersed with these promos. And what happens is that basically every single Georgia TV show is basically an hour-long commercial for the upcoming Omnicard. Typically,
and that's not even just Georgia. I think that was the territory.
Yeah, that was how it went.
But I think the Georgia TV is particularly marked for it. It's like it's just like there's nothing. It's literally just like bang, bang, bang. You know, come to the Omni. And the way a lot of that TV works is that you know that certain guys have issues with each other. So it'll be like, well, Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer, we know that those two have got issues. And then it'll be like, well, Tommy Rich has a match against some scrub, and Sawyer will come in and attack, and then his buddy will come and make the save. Or the
match will be going on, and Buzz Sawyer's on commentary cutting a promo on Tommy Rich while this happened. Or the famous picture frame of them talking while the match is happening, like he's cutting a pre-tape and stuff.
They throw you a bone, no pun intended, because one of the things I saw that they had up there that I forgot was Buzz Sawyer challenged Tommy Rich to a match right there and now, and Tommy had to fight in his street clothes because he didn't have time to change, and they had an actual studio match that way. That ended, of course, with
the schmoz, yeah.
With Tommy Rich beating up Buzz and Paul Ellering with his boot. Yeah. And then Mr. Wrestling 2 comes out for the save.
I mean, Georgia is basically, I mean, if you want to talk about, people thought like NWO run-ins were bad in the late 90s. I mean, Georgia TV, if it's a star versus star match, there's going to be a run-in, there's going to be a save.
There's going to be
a pull-apart brawl.
Yeah.
And it's all going to resolve itself because those four guys are going to have two singles matches at the Omni in a couple of weeks.
Right.
I mean, that's basically it.
And
I'm not trying to shit on the Georgia TV. It's one of the great TV shows, but it's just like it's not designed to be watched, you know, three episodes in a row. You have to almost sit down and try to watch it weekly, and then it's really frustrating because we don't have the Omni guards, so we never get to see the blow-offs.
Right.
Well, Memphis was pretty much the exact same formula, but I think maybe. Having Lance Russell and Dave Brown and some of the really outrageous type characters that bring you back every week made it work for Memphis TV. Because I'll sit and watch Saturday Memphis TV.
I think it's the same
exact thing as this.
I think Memphis has got a hell of a lot more kind of it's like every episode seems to have some sort of story arc or something going on, like in the studio or. You know, it's kind of like its own little world. I mean, Georgia is as well, and you do sometimes.
Memphis was pretty hot-shotty too. You know, I mean, so they ran a lot more angle. They're a lot more angle driven as opposed to Georgia.
I mean, you do get great angles on Georgia TV. We covered them when we did the Georgia show, like the DBRC pile drivers and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the week in week out TV is, you know, they'd live off that for 3 months. So, like, the next three episodes would be promos from Fuller or promos from Hayes or whatever.
Right.
And then
with an Ivan Koloff three-star squash match.
So I guess what I'm saying is, I mean, I guess we saw it a little bit when we watched Bruno versus Larry play out, where, yeah, there was an angle. Larry turned on Bruno, but then it was primarily driven by promos.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
In terms of actual plot points, not a lot happened in the story.
No, because they were selling one house show after the next for months and months.
So my impression is that Rich and Sawyer was a bit like, you know, they just hated each other and were in that kind of pattern for quite a long time.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it started, like what was the spark exactly.
They never make it clear. It's always the story of they both arrived there around the same time in their careers, and they were just natural enemies from day one. Because they're polar opposites of each other, and they're the same age and have always been polar opposites.
Right.
It's also easier back then because if you're a bad guy and you were a good guy, you naturally hated each other. I mean, that's how it was always portrayed, you know?
Yeah.
Well, right. I mean, recently somebody had started that discussion about the shared universe. You know, like the idea that all of the faces and all of the heels know each other. And it's not like, how can I explain? You know, like sometimes in WWE, like two guys have issues with each other and then they never interact with anybody else on the roster.
Yeah.
Whereas in Georgia, it's like permanently, these are your top three faces, these are your top three heels, and they all have issues with each other.
Right, interlocking feuds. That was, you know, a Southern wrestling
thing. And Crockett was like that as well for many years.
Yeah, Memphis, but when I said I don't remember or I don't know what the spark is, I do remember now reading that it was, I think, an interview segment where Buzz interrupted Tommy Rich, and that it was just a simple thing like that that started the feud, right? We've seen that in other feuds in other areas. Should I go into the research now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. The first match I could find on Wrestling Data was February 6th, 1982. So what that is, that 18 months approximately?
Yeah.
At Techwood.
They said it started in 82, yeah.
Yeah. So Techwood, WTBS Studios, it was on TV, this match. A couple months later at the Omni, May the 2nd, Buzz defeated Rich for the national title. So that was their first Omni match. They had a cage match as early as June 5th, 1982 in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And in the same city on July 31st, they had a coal miner's glove match against each other. So it was already hardcore.
Awesome.
October of 1982, another two matches at the Omni. The second was a no disqualification falls count anywhere match, apparently. And around this time, it morphed into a tag team deal with Ole Anderson being a frequent partner of Buzz, actually. And we'll get to this later, because I'm not sure how Ole played into the whole deal as well. But he was teaming with Buzz at the end of 82. A year to the day from the first TV match at Techwood, they had a match at the Omni on February 6, 1983. So the feud's a year long at this point. And then on July 17th, 1983, at the Omni, they had a Texas Death Match against each other. Oh, and I should mention, Buzz, pretty much, I think he won every match at the Omni between the two of them, coming into the LBOA, or LOBOA.
Do you know what the finishes were? Were they clean, or?
No, Wrestling Data doesn't really get into the specifics. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they weren't all clean finishes. But the point is, Buzz...
I'm sure none of them were clean.
Yeah, exactly.
I suspect they weren't either.
But the point is, Buzz won every match. So coming into this match, the last Battle of Atlanta, Buzz had won every match at the Omni between the two of them.
And Kelly, I'm like you. But I was trying to make it spell out labia, and I just couldn't get there. So
labia, LOBOA.
There you go.
That's not going to catch on. It seemed like there was a bit of a lull after the 1 year point and then it picked up in the fall of 83. And I think, yeah, there was the whole deal where they started interfering in each other's matches constantly. And I think there was an angle where, you know, someone ruled that they couldn't be in the same building anymore or something like that.
Yeah, like it didn't last a long time, apparently.
Yeah.
They just dropped it. But for like 90 days or something, they couldn't be in the same building.
Right. And then, like Johnny said, Geigel ruled on the whole thing. And they built to the show in October 1983 at the Omni. And it wasn't a sellout. Contrary to popular belief, they didn't sell out. The show the next month, the Thanksgiving show, actually had a higher attendance than the Last Battle of Atlanta. But the Thanksgiving show was his
babyface turn, right?
Right. Yeah, well, we'll get to that after the match, I guess, to discuss like the follow-up. But the Thanksgiving show in Atlanta was the biggest show of the year, so that it's not surprising that that drew more than the Last Battle of Atlanta. But that's pretty much all I have.
I'm sorry, Phil.
Go on.
Was that the tag tournament?
It usually was the tag tournament. I just know that they went against the Road Warriors, Rich and Sawyer, on the Thanksgiving show a month later.
Right. That's also the one I saw the results. I'm like, it was Magnum TA and Randy Savage.
That's
tag right. Team in this tournament. And I saw that and was just like, what? that's too much awesomeness.
Yeah.
Pair of joppers, you know?
Yeah. And I know, given the time it was, but I'm like, that I just realized what my dream tag team is, and I never knew it before.
Yeah, well, the tag team tournament, that was the annual tradition for Thanksgiving in Atlanta, was a tag team tournament.
Imagine they've got all of them on tape. I'd love to watch it, because those are some of the shows that you look on and you're like, holy shit, look at some of these cards.
Yeah, because they brought in guys that they normally didn't have.
It's like,
I thought Meltzer said they had both of these cards, all of it.
Oof.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because you've got like the Funks and the Briscoes on those cards.
Yeah,
the Anderson brothers,
yeah, there'll be a lot.
And the Sons are there. And
Yeah.
Anyway.
Maybe there's more Ganya metrics out there, too.
Maybe.
Want more.
But also, to add on to that, Kelly, I know they used to, they would bring their feud over to San Antonio, because I know I've watching some of the San Antonio TV, they have some of them, they have a match or two at the Hemisphere.
Yeah. Oh, and I didn't mention they had basically 150 matches against each other in that 2-year span. Not all singles matches, but still.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's a lot. And that's just recorded on wrestling data. There was obviously more than that. Probably.
Shows and this.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about being married to each other.
Yeah.
They have a short separation. They get back together, and it ends in bloodshed. It's like any marriage I've ever known.
Who's afraid of Virginia Woolf of wrestling? For you.
What do you think of the top and the bottom there?
I think we know. They don't call them Mad Dog for nothing.
Okay, so shall we get on to the reviewing the match?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Pete, you've been chomping at the bit, so I'll let you go first.
Oh, I have been chomping. I didn't know that. Okay.
Nice dog reference there, Favre. Fantastic.
I love the match. I thought it was really all about the hate. It was really hate filled. I love that we got the counts, like the audible 10 counts.
Yeah.
Where that also played into it, like you could be knocked out, which I thought added to the drama. I liked the early match, early start. I liked Rich. To start off, I love Buzz grabbing the top of the cage, and he just comes across like as the Mad Dog, and really good character work. And then Rich missing that elbow, and Buzz just works that arm with vigor and just destroys it. And I've seen people complain that like Rich didn't sell the arm enough, and it's like, that's not what the match is about. I mean, yeah. This is step one. I mean, this wasn't even the narrative of the match. This was This is like, hey, we're just starting off. It's almost like a lockup at this point. I mean, yeah, it's capitalizing on a mistake, and that was it. And then they shifted. They went in a different direction. I mean, they weren't working the arm. This is hate. This is supposed to be about two guys who hate each other.
Can I just say something on that, Pete, as well? Because I've seen some other people complain about this is a cage match. Why is he starting off working on the arm?
Well, he hit the cage.
Exactly. He injures his arm on the cage, so that is why Buzz works it. And it's not like he goes into it like a hammer lock or sits on the mat.
Yeah.
He's smashing the arm against the cage and then stomping on it, and then it's not like he goes in there and starts doing some Joe Malenko shit, you know?
Yeah, it was a hate-filled arm section. And also when you get back to it is, Rich has really two weapons that we know about. One, he throws a hell of a punch, and he has the Vez press. So he's trying to take a weapon away early, okay? But then he gets a little bit more personal. He moves away from it, and it's really just an afterthought. So it really. Him not selling the arm enough is, I think, is just a ridiculous talking point. It's like you're looking way too much for a problem when it doesn't exist. The other things I really liked was we see Rich with some once Buzz takes control and just gouging Rich and he's busted open and he's using the cage as a weapon and he's cheese grating the hell out of Rich and. Rich, I mean, bleeding a gusher. I mean, that was definitely a five-star blade job he does here. Mm-hmm. And the other things I liked was Rich tries to make these comebacks, and Buzz is so awesome at just cutting it off and all this stuff. And the other things that I saw people complaining about is they're saying, oh, it's a little methodical. Well, working a cut is methodical. I mean, you're trying to make them bleed even more. So it's not just about how hard you hit somebody, it's where you're hitting them. So you're trying to land your punches in an exact spot. So you're taking your time a little bit and you're bleeding, so you're naturally not going to be full of ready to run a marathon. They're selling. I mean, Parview listened to the Pat Patterson interview. Yep. He talks about how wrestling nowadays is a little too fast, and I agree with him in that aspect. And I mean, but here I don't think it's they're working so slow or anything. I thought they're working at a fine pace. I just think maybe some people just aren't realizing
it just wasn't a sprint. Basically, people maybe thought it should have been more of a sprint. I don't know, but then. Because I thought it actually played into the kind of character that Buzz was as well. Like, he's going to want to take his time to take pleasure in the pain that he's inflicting. That's kind of what I got from the methodical pace, you know?
He's vicious and he's maniacal. He wants to take his time. He's kind of like the Joker when he's beating the crap out of Robin in that comic.
The word I would use also is he's pretty intense as well.
Very intense. And again, the comebacks, I thought, and the cutoffs were well timed from both of them. And when Rich finally makes his comeback, it's just truly a glorious moment, and it's really well earned because he's taken such an ass kicking. And then we get to that point where they're both on their knees, and that punch exchange where they're both on their knees is just like an iconic moment.
Yeah.
And like I think I wrote this on Pro Wrestling Only, where if this was like a WWF moment or WWE moment, it would be that postage stamp where these two guys are punching the shit out of each other. And Sawyer's punches are just violent as hell, and Rich has these big grandiose punches. You know, they're not like vicious like Buzz's are, but they're just big and large. And I just thought this thing was just epic. 4.5 stars. I didn't really find anything really wrong with it. I thought it was I've seen the complaints. Another complaint is the Rich pile driver. Maybe I felt that was more of him just being desperate, going for a big move, trying to counteract the barrage that he was getting, because he was getting nowhere. But
amen.
What's the complaint about the pile driver? Sick. What's the complaint about it?
He came out of nowhere. It wasn't led to.
He was getting his ass kicked, and he needed it's a transition.
I know. I took it again. People take, you know, again, people put a little bit of more premium on the pile driver, as in it should be a finisher, I guess. And a lot of wrestling, we've watched enough wrestling where the pile driver is not.
I was going to say the people who have these criticisms are the ones that don't watch any of the classic wrestling. You know, they're just basing it on tendencies.
It's like I was trying to say, I've seen so many matches, especially Harley Race matches. I know Race isn't here in this one, but like Harley Race will typically hit a pile driver like just in the middle of his heat sequence. Yeah. And then, like, you know, maybe he'll hit like a body slam or a punch or, you know, even an Irish whip into the corner, and that will be enough for the cover. Yeah. It's just a different psychology, a different way of working.
Yeah. And even in a kayfabe way, they're suffering major blood loss. And woozy, you might not get all of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's so easy to explain that in the kayfabe.
There's an even nastier, sicker pile driver from Buzz a few minutes later. So, you know, I don't know. I thought there was a quite good kind of callback on the kind of two different pile drivers we got. I also, I mean, one of the things I liked, Pete, is that basically they each have little spurts of being on top, and then they cut each other off. So early on, for example, Rich cuts Buzz off with that nut shot, which I thought was brilliant, and then Buzz continues to sell like long term testicle selling. Basically, he throws Rich into the cage, and then he's still selling that, you know, the after effects of that nut shot, even when he's on top. And then the next time Rich cuts him off is when he hits that pile driver, and then Buzz cuts him off with the pile driver. So I thought it was quite a good kind of – it wasn't my turn, your turn. It was just like they had to pull out something to turn things around. I really liked the cutoff spots all the way through the match.
I loved them. I thought they made perfect sense and gave your babyface hope. That's what you need, you know. And on the flip side too, you know. I mean, it's just I thought it was so well worked, and I just saw some of the complaints. I just did not understand. Now, a lot of times I can see where people are coming from, but on a lot of these criticisms, I'm just almost rolling my eyes because it's so bad.
I think we should take special time out to talk about the finish, because this is one of the things that people have talked about a lot in the criticism that I've seen. But before we do that, let's get some quick takes from Johnny and Kelly on, you know, anything to add to what Peter said here. Johnny.
Thank God Pete's agreeing with me on this, with the rolling of the eyes at some of the criticisms, like, what? That's what bothered you? It doesn't make any sense. And I agree completely. And also, I just wanted to get across, if you're in the area at this time and you're aware of the whole history within this match, that's got to be the last one. It's not so much of, They quickly built to this exhaustion spot. Well, never mind the staggering amount of blood loss, which explains that. And in an artistic way, this is the culmination. They're exhausted of fighting each other for all this time. And they're going to drop to their knees and be that exhausted. That's to represent the story they're telling, that this has to stop. It's been going on too long, and that's the story that tells.
No one shit on Rocky and Apollo, Rocky too.
You know, and it's we'll get to the actual finish, which again, you know, I was like, you know, I'm sure Parr said something about what do you want, a Frankensteiner? But
That was pretty snarky.
That was awesome.
Oh, did he actually? Oh, that is that one? Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Awesome.
Well, I'm proud of you, friend.
Christ, my compounding my heat with the modern fans.
And actually, I wouldn't call what's his name.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think he's a modern fan.
No, I did apologize to him because I was
that was classy. Yeah, I was like, man, you're shitting on one of the few people who you'd probably get along with before.
If it's the guy I'm thinking about, yeah, he's a first class dude. So. The story this is telling, and I'll admit it, I might be a little prejudiced because this is what's been since I've been a teenage fan, the Holy Grail. Fuck yeah. But at the same time, maybe that makes me ready to be more disappointed in it. And I wasn't whatsoever. I was like, this lives up to everything I've been waiting to see. This tells the story I know. And I think maybe some of the criticisms are the people who are not aware of the story leading into this and are just watching it as a match alone. And I think that's where a lot of it's coming from. But anyway, yeah.
Doesn't have the investment in the match being uncovered and waiting to see him for 33 years.
I'd even give him, you know, as well, if you watched all the little bit that's out there and read just a little bit that's out there, it gives you a real basic understanding of the story. You know, if you were willing to do that, then maybe you'll get it. But I seriously doubt they're willing to do that. So.
Before I throw over to Kelly here, one of the other little things that I saw people talking about was that they were actually complaining about the heat, that the match didn't have a lot of heat. Yeah. And I mean, considering the crowd aren't mic'd up like they are these days, but you could still hear wild cheering from
Rich. They were red hot.
That camera is the hard camera that's all the way fucking in the boondocks. It's not even... Mm-hmm. By the crowd, so it's like it's up in a room pretty much. I want to say it's kind of like in a skybox.
You can still hear them.
You could feel the heat, though. It was a hot crowd. Yeah. It was fucking hot.
I mean, considering like I've seen like at SummerSlams and WrestleManias and things with 80,000, you know, and the sound just completely disappears in those places. I'm sure people are making noise. It's just like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just. Anyway,
it's a hard camera too. That's up though in the. It's not like it's out where everyone could walk by it. It's not like in the crowd. It's up there where they're recording it, kind of from like a theater box.
The volume on these things when they would go to like show you what happened at the Omni, the little clip you'd get on Saturday, the sound quality always varied.
Yeah.
The sound. I mean, typically, Johnny, what would happen is that they'd play like a 2-minute clip from this thing, and it would have Gordon Soley and one of the wrestlers talking over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's typically the way they did it. So
Crockett often would be maybe a couple of lines of like screaming Tony or David, but you know, yeah.
Kelly.
Yeah, I don't know what they're talking about. It not being heated. It was obviously heated. It's just denial. Well, I want to preface my thoughts by saying yesterday I had a shitty day. I lost my phone somehow on the way to work, and it's gone.
Well, I'm glad you didn't say job.
No. That would have been way, way worse. And I probably wouldn't be talking to you guys right now. Anyway, I lost my phone. So I was in a miserable mood all day. Miserable. And finally got home, and my fiance put on the TV and started watching one of her shows. And I hadn't really planned on watching this last night. I was going to watch it today, actually. So I was like, well, fuck it. I bought some donuts on the way home to...
Tim Hortons?
Not Tim Hortons. Safeway, actually. to soothe the pain, I needed some comfort food. So I took some donuts, put them on a plate, went into the bedroom with my laptop and put on The Last Battle of Atlanta, and I was in heaven, and the shitty day melted away. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of how I was feeling going into it, this was a great match. I loved it. You know, it was what I wanted it to be, just a hate-filled brawl, blood right away, nothing but brawling. The crowd was super hot, and yeah, I like so many cool spots in this. like the pile driver from Tommy Rich was a hope spot. Like, I loved that. I was like, a hope spot pile driver. You know, it was fucking great, because then Buzz was right back on offense after that. I thought the climax was great, you know. Just when he thought Tommy had it, then he missed a fist drop. And Buzz was back on offense, and more cage shots. And I thought the selling of exhaustion by both men was great. You know, where they were getting slower and slower as the match went on. It reminded me of Randy Savage and Ronnie Garvin in a cage, probably right from around this time, actually, from ICW. That's a really great match, and there was parallels to that, I thought, with this one. And man, it's. How great is it that we got the last Battle of Atlanta? I mean, I still can't fucking believe it. I can't believe we're talking about it a week ago. This was unknown. A week ago, this was totally unknown. This even existed, and we're doing a fucking podcast on it, man.
Yeah, I'm sure. In a recent show that I did, I can't remember which one because, you know, so many podcasts these days, and I'm on half of them. But I'm sure I just mentioned in part, and, you know, short of the last Battle of Atlanta coming out of nowhere, this is as good as it gets type thing. Do you remember I made that comment? And it's like 2 weeks later.
It just dropped out of the sky.
Maybe you're talking about Fuji Patterson.
It's all about you,
Carter. Yeah, it's all about you. I loved it. This was so cool.
I don't know about you guys. I've watched it a few times, and I think it gets better each time I watch it.
I have actually watched it 3 times now.
We watched it once.
One of the things that we need to talk about before...
I can't show the little guy this. I'm sure his parents will be thrilled.
Before we move on to the next bit, which is the only fucking grievous bodily harm segment, let's talk about the abrupt finish here, because it, like, when I first watched it, I was actually in the middle of telling someone, "Oh, I'm about 12 minutes in," and then the match ended. I was like, "Huh?" I rewound it to watch the finish again. And it does kind of come, it did catch me a little off guard when I first watched it. I have to admit. But then I thought, well, you know, Buzz, literally a minute before this, takes the sickest running dive into the cage. I mean, it's absolutely insane. He basically just launches himself head first into the cage. And I thought, well, if that was me, I'd be knocked out too. So... you know, it does kind of, like, that is the big spot into the finish. I noticed that watching it again just now as well. So, any thoughts on the finish, Pete?
I had no problem with it. I thought it worked perfectly with what they did, which was, I mean, they sold what they needed to sell. They sold exhaustion, so the finish should be kind of there. And you still don't want to finish that. It's not going to just, you don't want to completely... finish it as a stamp of this is over type of thing, but you want it where it's final enough, and that's what I thought we got. I mean, 80s finishes are just a tricky bird, you know?
Yeah.
Caddy, any thoughts?
I was fine with the finish. I mean, it's we've seen this. We're familiar with the era. We know it's different now. They're a lot more aware of this, and the finishes are more carefully planned. But it was perfectly fine. And then the post finish where they're both, you know, they had to be carried out of the ring, both of them. That was great. That totally sold it as being the last battle. Mm-hmm. That was epic. They had to be dragged out. Buzz was just as bloody as I've ever seen a wrestler almost at the end. He was just, his face was just total, completely red. And it took him a long, it took Ellering a long time to get him out of the cage. I thought that was great. That for me, that was what made it all. They tied it all up. Was how they sold the post match.
Johnny, any thoughts on the finish?
We talked about the sound and the hard camera. Imagine, you know, shots right up there when you're up close, and these guys who it finally comes down to this. And I didn't notice the head dive. Parv must have, like, looked down for a second. And I attribute that to years of us watching the grainiest of footage and picking up on stuff. Everything's clear to us. No, I just looked away. But, how can you not see this is brilliant? But imagine the sound of Buzz getting slammed in that cage. Just whom, boom, boom. And they're just falling on each other out of exhaustion. And finally, just one last throw your ass into this fucking cage because it's all I've got left. I don't have any fancy moves left. We got nothing left except just slamming each other into this fucking cage. And then finally someone can't answer a three count. And as Kelly said, both of them carried out of that ring covered in blood. Yeah. You know, where Ellering's looking actually concerned, you know, like, oh, Jesus Christ, this guy needs to see a fucking doctor. It's brilliant. I think it's fucking brilliant. Love it.
All right. Now, I hate to do this, but I think in order to give this, you know, the proper coverage it deserves, we have to recognize the fact that in the past day, we've seen guys range from five stars, which was my good buddy Chad Campbell, my co-host on Where the Big Boys Play. He dropped the very first review literally about 20 minutes after it aired. That was the hottest take of all time.
Red hot.
I mean, he that must have been the first review online, I reckon. Anyway.
I know it. That bastard wanted to beat me. That's why.
And I knew in his head he was saying, yes, I beat Pete.
You might deny it, but I know it.
But it's
just like the Olympics. What a race!
he dropped the big five on it, and then I was literally seeing ratings all the way down to like 2.5 stars.
Yeah,
and everything in between. Now you gave it 4.5, Pete.
Yeah.
Why is it missing out on that 0.5 for you? I have to ask you.
A little stuff. You know, it's not all. I mean, it's so hard because it's not about math. I mean, even though I give it a math number, it just missed just a little thing here or there. It just didn't resonate overall. I don't throw many five stars around, so I mean, I can't even remember any I've thrown here on Titans. So
that's not surprising.
For example, you gave the did you not give the Texas Death Match between Backlund and Patera 4.75?
Did I?
Oh, I did, but did you not give that?
I'm gonna broach something. Do you think if, say, Gordon Solie was doing commentary, if we had commentary, would that have been?
I think commentary might have put it over the top. Yeah, I think they would.
Yeah, with Gordon with the story, that's what I'm thinking is the missing thing here.
Are you sure that Solie would have put it on? It would have been like Tommy Rich. I mean, I can't do a Solie impression, but he's excited.
and Tommy Rich throws Buzz Sawyer into the cage again.
That was Howard Cosell, I believe.
It wasn't? Yeah, okay. He's drunk doing a Howard impression.
Okay. I have to go through this with Pete. This is the bit where we do super hardcore analysis now, Pete. Now, I'm going to take you through the pantheon here, okay? And you just say higher or lower, okay? Final Conflict.
I have it higher.
You have this higher than Final Conflict.
No, okay. I have Final Conflict higher.
Yeah, I have Final Conflict higher as well. What else can we put in there? Sarge versus Patterson.
I have this at higher than I had Sarge and Patterson.
Ooh. Okay, I've got Sarge Patterson higher as well. Sarge Sheik.
No, I had this higher than Sarge Patterson.
Yeah, and I've got it the other way around. I've got Sarge. Yeah. Okay. Sarge Sheik.
I had Sarge Sheik higher.
Okay, and obviously Magnum Tully, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I had Magnum Tully higher.
Okay, I just want to.
Great cage matches. I think we should talk about is the Morton Flair one. I mean,
Morton Flair, yeah.
And I think I have Garvin Flair, where Garvin won the title a lot better than this. I mean, I think this is like a top 10, 15 type cage match of all time.
But I'm just trying to establish a pantheon of like all time great American brawls type thing. Does it belong in that company for you though, Pete?
It's very close. As if it's not, it's just barely missing, you know?
Okay. And Johnny,
for you? I think it's an epic match. So, I mean, I don't want. I mean, I threw 4.5 down on it. So,
I mean, it's awful that we kind of have to do this like the day after it drops, but that's basically what the community is now. So,
you know. Well, then the community stinks. I would just picture, because, see, people would just throw that 5 stars around just willy nilly nowadays. These kids, it's like high spots, you know, in a match. Now, Pete.
How dare you?
You don't throw out them 5 stars that just willy nilly, motherfucker. You know, he's like an old gunfighter strolling through Texas.
And if it means anything, Parv, I like Ted Duggan better.
Oh, there's another one. Oh, yeah,
that's another one. I forgot about that. Yeah.
I was waiting for Parv's next match to compare it to. And how would you compare it to Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant versus Johnny Vasquez and.
Oh, yeah, the Battle of Atlantic City.
The Battle of Atlantic City.
Now we're getting silly.
Johnny, do you automatically place it in the same company as those sorts of matches that I just mentioned? Legendary matches.
Fucking matches. So some I agree with, so I just think it's far better than it was like Garvin Flair. Really?
Well, I didn't mention that one.
Starts different folks, I guess.
I thought you gave that one 5 stars.
Is that the one where Garvin wins the match?
Yeah.
That's a fantastic match, John. You need to go back and watch that one, mate.
Cool down. I didn't say it wasn't a great match. I love that match. Okay, chill out. This, I think it's transcendent. It's everything I wanted it to be, and it's right now nothing's better than Magnum Tully, ever. Yeah. So I'd put it right now in my top 3, below Magnum Tully and the first Lawler Dundee Loser Leaves Town match.
There's another one.
But then this probably goes in right next. You know, things change, but I'm like, that's my thing I've been waiting to see for all these years. Saw it, and it was everything I wanted. So it's gonna be that high for me. So there you go.
I almost really don't want to have this conversation, but I just think it's been like almost forced by the discourse around the damn thing. So
yeah. Oh no. We have to have this conversation. When else are we gonna have it? Really.
I know this is like Johnny's least favorite thing in the world to do. Is that
No. Here's the funny thing. It's like the four Titans are going to debate on whether or not this is awesome or super awesome.
Yeah, basically. I think it's I don't know if it's super awesome. Commentary is the one thing that is missing from it that the others have, and that definitely does add to matches. I think Patterson and Sarge is better for sure. And then of course, I mean, yeah, Magnum and Tully, Lawler and Dundee, those are all classics that I've seen numerous times. I've only seen this one once. So I think time will have to, you know, tell before I can make a definite statement on this. But I think it's great. I mean, it's in the pantheon. It's in the conversation for sure.
Okay, great. Well, I just thought we'd have to do that. I mean, one of the things that I'm convinced has played into the kind of variance in the reactions on this isn't just the age of things. We are, I mean, of the guys online, the four of us are probably, you know, among those who watch. We're used to watching grainy footage. We're used to watching this era. You know, if you're some dude who is used to watching like NXT and, you know, the latest pay-per-view, go like, this must have been a bit of a culture shock, even just to come back and watch this out, you know, cold. I can imagine that being quite difficult, you know, almost like I'd have to imagine it the other way around. Like I suddenly turn up at an ROH show or something and that would be a culture shock. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But it's almost like you have to look at it the other way around. And so I can kind of see, like, even though I don't agree with the criticism, I can kind of see why they have some of those.
Right.
But I haven't read that criticism. So, you know, unless that's a deep-seated psychological thing, I haven't read that as a criticism. I've just read, can't believe this looks as good as it does, is mainly what I've read. So, I get your point completely, but I just get to see that pop up.
Yeah.
No, I mean it's kind of different. It's kind of like it's just one of those things where it hasn't been like universal praise across the board from what I've seen. Like little tweets here and there, and even on the board, even on Pro Wrestling Only, there's
maybe they just don't admit that that's a thing for them.
I don't know. I'm just saying that like the types of criticism I've seen. Some of it to me seems like, well, you know, maybe some of these people aren't used to watching Zero as much as we are.
Oh, well, yeah, they probably watch hardly any of Next to None, I'm sure.
Most of the criticism I've seen is not understanding what working is. I hate going that way, but like, I can't figure out why these guys are working this way. And I was like, then because you're not getting it. This is brilliant work.
Right. Now,
it's
I don't
all about they work for emotion, not this is awesome.
Exactly. That's a great point right there.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation, Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Team's Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO PTBN podcast network. I don't want to end this now because we have to talk about the almost like the bonus match that came afterwards, which I mean when I first sat down, because I was still recovering from the fact that the match had ended, and I was just gathering my thoughts a little bit. And then I was like, oh, Ole Anderson's here, and he's wearing some cut-up jeans, as if he's like a teenager.
They weren't cut up at the beginning.
The start.
But anyway, Ole Anderson's here, and he's wearing jeans, and he's dressed for a street fight. And Paul Ellering is in tights, and... basically, Ole Anderson just kicks the living shit out of Paul Ellering in one of the best and most brutal beatdowns I've ever seen. And I was absolutely captivated for the entire. I just was almost sitting there in a trance watching Ole just absolutely batter Ellering. What did you make of this, Pete?
Oh, I loved it. I thought this was a great oldie performance. I mean, he pretty much did this with a tackling dummy because the Ellering guy didn't think really brought a whole lot to the whole table here. This was just oldie being oldie guzzling somebody, and it was awesome. It's probably why I love oldie and Arn as a tag team when they wrestle the Rock and Roll Express, because oldie is so great and Morton's incredible at selling that stuff. But here, man, it was just violent. At first, it didn't really register with me, but I watched it again, and I'm like, God, what am I talking about? This was awesome, and it was only just beating the living crap out of Paul Ellering. I wish Ellering, I mean, it was just weird in a way, because Ellering is like a manager, but he's in wrestling tights, and Ole's the wrestler, but he's wearing jeans. But, man, it was just, I thought it was an incredible Ole performance.
I saw Dylan, one of our friends, call it what the best Ole match he's ever seen. Would you go that far?
No.
I would
it
still
might be
go
his best performance he's ever
best
have
performance.
Ever seen.
Probably the best match would be against Rock and Rolls, right?
Yeah.
Starrcade 86, mm-hmm. But
yeah. I'd give it best singles Ole's
yeah,
match.
Yeah, yeah.
Best singles.
Yeah. We don't have too much to go by, though.
He has singles a pretty great one with Magnum TA.
Oh, yeah, there's that one with Magnum, Pete. You're right. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah. Good call, Pete. But, yeah, I mean, great performance. Like, just, Ole's such a tough bastard, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Such a, what
you
did you make of this?
You buy into him doing it. That's the thing. You buy into his character 100%.
Yeah.
Well, I thought the police should have been called. I mean, he was kidding him.
Paul Ellering is a licensed professional wrestler. It's all outside the confines of the law.
Do not imitate their performances or actions.
No. If it happens in the ring or around the ring, law enforcement can't do anything about fireballs or chain attacks or nothing. So it's okay.
Kelly, what did you make of the Ole massacre?
Yeah. This was cool. Ole is a guy I've always loved. I love seeing more Ole because there isn't a ton out there of his like prime. And this would have been, you know, on the cusp of when he would have been past his prime at this time, but still. It was cool. I loved the end, just how he put Ellering down with a super stiff headbutt, like it was a bar fight finish. And like we mentioned the jeans getting ripped up. I'm not certain, but Ole may have been going commando that night. I'm just leaving that.
I believe you're right,
I'm
sir.
Just putting that out there. I just, you know, I didn't go back and play it again, but I
okay.
think I may
and
have caught a glimpse of something.
And Kelly, you have touched on a theory that my good friend Rev Ray over at DVDVR pointed out. The reason this has been buried for as long as it had, by old Anderson Sensei, is because you catch a glimpse of Ole's balls. That's I'm killing this angle.
I think that's as good of a theory as any. And I just want to say at the end with Jake Roberts making a surprise appearance
in a
Pro Wrestling Illustrated t-shirt also.
Loved it.
Which was awesome. The classic red PWI shirt.
It was sweet, man.
That was another Twitter deal. I saw people speculating on who that was. I was like,
yeah, I didn't know. I wasn't sure it was the first. Then I'd actually had to go look.
Oh yeah,
you know,
I'm
like, oh yeah, okay, that's,
it's not immediately. It wasn't immediately.
Not immediately, but for me it didn't take too long to. Because I've even
Pete, I'm ashamed. I knew immediately because he was in the Legion of Doom.
Right,
he was in the Legion of Doom.
Yeah, the original.
But I'm like thinking it was just running through me. I know he was in the Legion
and
of Doom. I just.
I know I've seen pictures of Jake in that PWI shirt too, in the mags back in the day. So that was the cherry on top of the sundae for me with Jake in there for that whole thing. I mean, what a spectacle this was. This was awesome. This is one of the greatest things of all time. Awesome.
I hate to come back to super hardcore nerdery, but Kelly's tag team partner did a run-in on PWO, Marty Sleaze.
Yes.
And
I'm not responsible
did a double
for Marty's reviews.
He did a double run-in, and his hot take was that the Ole match was as good as The Last Battle of Atlanta, and he gave them both 4.5.
No.
He's young.
No, Marty.
He's young. He's a little reckless with his ratings. He'll learn. He'll learn.
Maurice probably said that, and so that's why he just lives parody.
Well, you better watch that young Starflinger, not to get in the way of a fucking Shane up here in the corner, because he might have to throw them 5 stars and take down a rookie.
That's the trouble with this wrestling review game. Everybody's trying to get themselves over. Chad with his 5 stars. Marty with a double 4.5, you know, Tay with his 2.5.
But that Simpsons where Homer's a reviewer and he gives shit 20.
Everybody getting themselves over with their hot takes.
The hot take world.
We haven't had your star rating, broski.
Well, to be honest,
we don't do quarters, so but go on.
I think you're about on the money, Pete, with your 4.5. And then the only beat down, more like a 3.75.
Hold on. Is that on the Richter scale?
I had it at 3.334 too, buddy.
Yeah, that's about right. I don't know. A match is lost for 33 years. It's the holiest of all holy grails. To an extent, it can't possibly live up to the level of hype, because what could? It would literally have to be fucking, I don't know, to lock Steamboat and Flair up in a vault for 33 years and hype it up and hype it up. I don't even, right. Like, do you think people would... still give it 5 stars? I don't know. It's kind of a unique circumstance to review a match, and everything you say about it feels wrong. Like, I don't know what to say, to be honest.
Well, at least people looked at, they had, even though their opinions were like, some of them I thought were wrong about what they said if they didn't like it. When Meltzer was talking about the Johnny Valentine match being like modern MMA, it's nuts. It's like he's watching a totally different match than I watched. I didn't see any MMA influence in the Johnny Valentine Bull Curry match.
Hey, Pete, I just hope that you're not dying now that you've seen the Holy Grail.
Yeah, I know.
It's all downhill from here.
Stay on, broskies. I've been Louisiana, and then I worked 7 days in a row when I got back. I've been on like 14 days. Yeah.
Okay, well, just to finish up here, and I realize this has been a bit ramshackle, folks, but, this is just a kind of special hot off the press type show.
Is that a British term? That
ramshackle? I don't know what the American equivalent would be.
Ramshackle.
I don't speak English, colonials. No, just before we sign out, I want to do two things. First is what happened after this. We kind of alluded to it. They started tagging.
Yes. I don't think it lasted too long. I mentioned the Thanksgiving show, the very next Omni show, where they Buzz and Tommy teamed up against the Road Warriors, who were, of course, Ellering's boys. And then at some point, isn't this when DiBiase and Rich start feuding? With the Mr. R thing?
Yeah, but it's also the turn is Bart Wayne getting the shit kicked out of him, and Buzz Sawyer coming to his rescue and revealing that Bart Wayne is actually Bart Wayne Sawyer, his brother, and he rescues him from, I believe, a beatdown from the Legion of Doom.
It was from the Legion of Doom.
And they... that's how Buzz turns.
Actually, this is where Arn was supposed to make his soon debut, and he was supposed to start teaming with Buzz like right after this, but then all that, what the hell?
Mm-hmm. I feel like the Ted deal is a bit later, late 83 going into 84.
Right, but that was when, because I saw results where it was Mr. R teaming up with Buzz Sawyer again.
It's kind of weird. He comes in for a brief run, and then he's off to Japan, and then he's like back for a... And like the return, I think he has a longer run in early 84. Right. And like he's doing, that's around the time he's doing those shots with, he has those matches with Magnum TA as well.
Right. Yeah, it was a weird thing because I had Duggan sign this program of the Loser Leave Town match I have of Ted and Doug in, and yeah, and I still can't get the timeline straight on what the hell is all going on.
Because he was basically working Georgia shots for Watts and All Japan all at the same time. Right. So
well, and the Georgia and like, Georgia territory was
and random
last
Houston
wave.
Shows as well, Pete.
Yeah.
Anyway, just before we sign off. Another really fun topic people have been talking about recently is the Holy Grails. Like, now the ultimate Holy Grail has been found. What is your Holy Grail? While you're thinking, I can give you one of mine if you want.
Go ahead.
Please do.
I know I had IRS and the Lower Road Warriors, right?
It's it's Money Inc. versus Legion of Doom.
It's Money Inc. in a time travel loop versus Andre and Ted from the Atlantic City match.
No, it's the February 92 title switch where Ted pins Hawk. For years I refused to believe it existed, but our buddy PF has claimed that it definitely does exist. And it was taped. So there we go. Basically the deal was, Johnny, the Road Warriors said, like, we'll do this job, but you can't ever show it on TV. Then they never did show it on TV because the deal was that the natural disasters ran in. And then they changed the booking, so they never ran the Legion of Doom natural disasters feud. And if you remember, it was, I don't know, they did a face turn with the earthquake and typhoon, and it was then Money Inc. versus them in a terrible feud instead. So that's why that match has never seen the light of day. So it's quite a big title switch to never be seen. So that's probably my... Oh, and Mr. Fuji versus Bobby Heenan from 1991.
Right.
Got any, Kelly?
Yeah, well, are we going with something that conceivably or had to conceivably be filmed or could be anything?
Yeah, I mean, don't make them,
something within the realms of possibility, I guess.
I don't know if it's in the realm of possibility, but it's Blassie against Tolos from the LA Coliseum, 1971. Legendary. It was a cage match, too, coming off the blinding angle. I don't think there's any chance of that ever turning up because I don't think there was any cameras on that. Although there's still photos, but yeah, I mean, who knows?
That's one of the all-time legendary matches.
Yeah, exactly. And then another one, also in a cage and also coming off a blinding angle, and this one may have a better chance of turning up, is JYD against Michael Hayes at the Superdome in 1980.
The one that sold it out.
It didn't sell it out. They drew like 30,000 people, which is impressive.
The biggest wrestling audience in New Orleans for however long it was.
Oh, yeah, it was ever. Well, until WrestleMania, whatever. But, yeah. So that would be mine.
Pete, you got any?
Yeah, you know, one of the ones I was really super stoked to see that popped up on NWA On Demand was actually some JYD versus Butch Reed matches, because there's no real footage. I mean, we have highlights, but we didn't have any actual – if you looked at the Mid-South set, there wasn't any actual matches between the guys, singles matches. And they've gotten like four up on NWA On Demand, which I think is cool. But – since I'm doing the Houston thing, I'd love to see the Dory Harley title change.
Oh, yeah, good call. I mean, there you go.
Could be. They might have it in that vault.
That's true.
That's a really good
call. That's like one of the only ones that aren't out there of NWA title change.
Well, and there's so much mythology around that match, too, because, of course, it was meant to be Briscoe.
Yeah.
Dory. That's a great one.
Yeah.
And they just popped up with a 1973 Jose Lothario, Great Mephisto match. So they do have footage in that era. You know what I'm saying?
One of the little things that did disappoint me with the Hidden Gems was that Dory Kanitsky match was still just the clips that we've seen a million times.
I was going to ask you about that, because like Matt D was like, anyone has ever seen this? I go, there's clips of that one about 10 minutes, 7 to 8, 9, 10 minutes.
It's exactly the same, just with a bit of Soli in front. Johnny, you got any?
Not anymore. Well, until Kelly brought up the JYD stuff and some of the other ones that you brought up. So I'm going to cede that time, but I just want to address one point back to the Ellering-Ole match. I'm going to use my time for this. Okay. They told Paul that he was going to have to wrestle Ole. So he shows up in his wrestling gear, and he gets out, and oh, shit, this motherfucker's dressed for a street fight. Yeah, he fooled me. That's how I took it. And I read a complaint that, well, why did Ellering get in any offense? Because he does get in some. It's because he's supposed to be, he's a manager, yes, but he's also a wrestler. He's supposed to be, if you get him in the ring, he can still fuck you up.
Yeah.
You know, it's still his character. If you look at that build on him, man, Jesus.
Yeah.
You know? I thought Ellering was a former wrestler.
Oh, yeah.
He was.
He still wrestled. Inserted into the bloody War Games matches in 1980.
Exactly. So him getting in a little offense, I thought that works. Because he only does get beat down a little bit. You know, sandbag is one thing, because that's Ole. And
I actually popped for the Ellering comeback. I was like, shit, he's coming back.
It's not going to last long, you know, but it's going to be real quick to build the tension of that match. To be like, it's just, yeah, I'm just going to beat you up for, you know, 10 minutes with no comeback whatsoever.
I've even watched Bobby Heenan matches where he has a bit of a kind of, you know.
And Heenan also, they could say,
Just think of when you've ever actually been in a fight. I mean, maybe you've never been in one, but like you even got those situations where people, when they get angry, will get a burst of adrenaline and find it in them somewhere. Even a Bobby Heenan would, you know. So,
yeah.
Like, it's totally believable to me.
It's not believable if it's Jimmy Hart or Jim Cornette, but if it's a former wrestler, then fuck It totally makes sense.
Silly criticism.
But to answer the question again, it's got to be that JYD Hayes thing because.
And for me, one of the other little things is any Amarillo stuff. I mean, we did the whole show on it before. The thing I'm tantalized by, Kelly, is that match that they show on Tuesday Night Titans with the Dory Red Bastien thing.
Right.
Like, that's still a complete mystery as to why that exists or how they had it and how they showed it.
Well,
but that suggests that other stuff was taped.
Right.
Why would just that one match be taped?
Right. So. No, there's probably tons of stuff out there that people have, private collections, wrestlers have, that aren't in the hands of the WWE and aren't in the hands of traders. And, you know, you never know what's going to turn up. This, like I said earlier, the Last Battle of Atlanta coming to light, that, you know, this gives us hope that we'll get some of these other holy grails out there.
The thing is, they're in the hands of hoarders.
Right.
It's a Dave Meltzer's secret stash place.
Right.
Kelly, do you think there's any chance that the WWE have got, like, old Capital Wrestling, like, 60s stuff? Is there any chance that there's any? Because I know there's kind of early Vince Sr. shows from Market that he had, or even the Chicago shows that he had.
Right. I'm going on a post that I read at Kayfabe Memories about a guy who happened to run into Gorilla Monsoon in the 70s. I think it was at an airport. And he asked Monsoon then, like, how far back do your archives go? And Monsoon said nothing earlier than 1972. So...
Right.
Okay. I'm going to go with that because that was like, you know, that's inside knowledge. So, but who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. And they said, you would have gotten the answer you wanted if you had asked it properly.
Well, great. Well, I mean, who knows? The Omni stuff is the biggest hope, I think, because if they've got this, then it stands to reason that they should have loads of other stuff too.
Speaking of that, do you think this is going to get enough significant play where it's like impactful on the network or no?
Unfortunately, it's had buzz. It has had buzz.
Yeah, I think so.
Probably enough for somebody to sit up and take notice.
Yeah, they don't completely ignore all internet buzz. And granted, we're a little niche area and all that stuff, but even in, you know, the it's all over, and people are like freaking out about it, and everyone's watching it, and whether or not they hate it or not, they're watching it, and that's what they count, is how many times something is watched.
The thing that gives me hope, Pete, is the fact that they didn't just run with the one match. They decided to package it up as this hidden gems business and gave us stuff like the Garnia Metrics and the Dory match and
the Fez match.
So it was kind of like,
I'm looking forward to seeing Samoa Joe and Regal go at it. I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't watched that Bret Funk match. So
that's a great match. That's a really good match, Barb. I've seen it before. I haven't watched it.
I know it's been out there, but
Dennis Stamp gets booked. Come on.
Yeah, well, I know which match it is. It's just I've never sat down and watched it. So. Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of Gorilla Monsoon, there's a match of him when he was Gino Marella in Calgary.
Oh, I watched it.
Did you watch that against Dave Rule?
Yeah,
a guy who Travis and I on the previous Titans, our last Stampede show, we talked about him, and at that time there was no footage of the guy, and he was one of the biggest stars in the territory in the 50s and 60s, so that match has got me very excited.
I loved the Andre Test of Strength stuff. That was
right,
cool,
and that was from LA, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
It looked like the Olympic Auditorium.
One of the things that I always think back to is, do you remember? I mean, I'm sure you guys watched them as well. Do you remember Legends Wrestling?
Yeah.
Now, on that, they would always show these little clips that I'd never seen before. And I'd be like, where's that from then? Where's the rest of that show? You know, there's quite a lot of like weird little stuff they show during the Legends of Wrestling, and just suggests to me that there is way more there than we only see like the tip of the iceberg of what they've actually got. So,
yeah, I think
that gives me hope.
Yep, I think there's a lot of hope.
Yeah.
Or some dummy who they send down there and go, make a quick clip reel of a bunch of old shit, and you just cut a bunch of stuff to death, and that's through the rest of the garbage.
Wow, Mr. Right. Positivity being the negative one—that's unusual.
All right, well, thanks a lot for tuning in, and also, I mean, you know, if you're a longtime Titans fan, let us know what you thought about the last Battle of Atlanta. Yeah. This has been a great week to be a wrestling fan, and it gives us all hope for many more years to come.
Yeah!
Better?
Home run.
Oh, it's not like it used to be.
All the bells are ringing. Good night, ain't no more. People were